Om Namo Brahmadebhyo. Oh, wrong, sorry. Om Ha Pyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshu Shrotram Ato Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarota Anirakaranamastvanirakaranamehastu Tadatmani Nirate Ya Upanishad Sudharmas Te Mayi Santu Te Mayi Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good, welcome back. So we've just begun the seventh chapter, Bhuma Vidya. Bhuma means that which is limitless. And we're going to see the whole chapter is devoted to that topic very, very precisely, but in a very poetic manner, in which it's developed through, a series of, we're seeing a series of 15 upasanas. And these 15 upasanas are followed by 11 more steps. Meaning, in order to get from here to there, there is Bhuma, Brahman, which is limitless and vast. In order to get from here to there, we have a total of 26 steps. By the way, nice connection between Brahman and Bhuma. Bhuma, as I said, means fast. Most of you know that Brahman is derived from the root brih. Brih means to be big. And what's significant is the word Brahman means then bigness without any limitation, without a qualifying adjective. So, you know, if whenever we use the word big, it's always with reference to something. For example, you say a big mountain. It's big. You can also talk about a big mosquito. So a big mosquito is big compared to other mosquitoes, I suppose, but it's tiny. So Brahman, from a etymological standpoint, is bigness without any qualification, without any limitation. So that's why it ends up meaning the same as Bhuma, that which is vast, without limit. The chapter 7, Bhuma Vidya, opened with Narada going to the sage Sanat Kumara, asking for spiritual instruction. And Narada begins by narrating what he's learned so far. And as you remember, he's not showing off, but rather Sanat Kumara asked him, please tell me what you've studied so far so I don't have to repeat what you've already learned so I can pick it up where you left off. And Narada then narrates this whole long list of scriptures and shastra that he has studied, at the end of which he admits that in the first person, he says, I am shastra, I am mantravit, natu atmavit. I know the meaning of these scriptures, but I don't know my true self as atma. Please teach me. And Sanat Kumara begins by saying, all that you've learned is nama. Nama here meaning literally name, but words in general. But then he begins these 15, he, Sanat Kumara, begins a series of 15 meditations. So he says, meditate on nama, word, as Brahman. We discussed in the last class intentional superimposition. I don't want to go back through that whole topic. If you miss a class, make sure you go and listen to the recording so you stay in sync with us. So intentional superimposition is what we do at our altar. We superimpose the God of the cosmos on Sri Krishna, who's 2 feet tall. But that's the way it works. This is symbolism. This is intentional superimposition. And this is what's used for this particular kind of meditation called upasana. So Sanat Kumara is going to teach the series of 15 upasanas, meditations. He begins by saying, meditate on nama, word, as Brahman, which means superimpose, deliberately superimpose the infinitude of Brahman on words, which are not infinite, any more than Sri Krishna on our altar is infinite. It's 2 feet tall. So this is the intentional superimposition. This is at the root of this kind of meditation called upasana. Having done that, then Narada asks, I will do that meditation, but is there anything better? Very typical. He says, is there anything bhuyaha, more than nama, than name, than word? Is there anything beyond that? I suppose Narada is thinking, you know, this nama, this shabda, something very trivial, and I want to know Atma, so is there anything bhuyaha? Is there anything more? And Sanat Kumara says, yes, of course. Vak. Vak means speech. Speech means the instruction through which these shabdas, these words, these namas are uttered. And then, not surprisingly, Sanat Kumara says, meditate on vak. As Brahman, deliberately superimpose Brahman on Vak. And this is setting us up for this whole sequence. I just want to show one thing, and then we will proceed. So we start with something small. Superimpose Brahman on Nama. And then we have something a little larger in scope, not in size. We're not talking about size of physical size of things, but the scope of Vak is greater than the scope of Nama, because it Vak is that through which Nama comes. So Vak is the is a cause-effect relationship, so the cause is greater than the effect. This is the kind of logic that's used here. So if you think of nama as our starting point, and then comes vak in the next meditation is going to be something larger in scope, manas. Then the next meditation is going to be something larger yet in scope, sankalpa. And the next is going to be something larger in scope, chitta, I think it comes in the... And that continues for 15. I'm not going to draw all 15. There's no need to do that. But what we're doing is expanding the scope. Why? How big is bhuma? We're getting there step by step by step by step. And that's what this whole chapter is about, a step-by-step approach. We'll go through some of it. There's some very important Shankara commentary, bhasha, I want to share with you later, but we need to get back into the groove here, as it were, and see this sequence. So in where we left off yesterday means last week. He says, vacham upasva. He says, upasva iti, iti. Thus, upasva, you should meditate on vacham, on vak. Meditate on vak. That's where we left off, and this is where we resume. Saha yaha vacham, saha yaha vacham, brahma iti upaste, brahma iti upaste, yavat vachaha gatam, yavat vachaha, tatra asya yatha kamacharaha bhavati, yatra asya yatha kamacharaha bhavati, yaha vacham brahma iti upaste, yaha vacham brahma iti upaste. Stop there. So, saha yaha brahma iti upaste, saha yaha upaste, one who meditates on vacham, as on speech, as being brahma iti, one who deliberately superimposes Brahman on vak for the sake of meditation. I mentioned last week that it's a very common technique or style, I should call it, in the Veda, that once you give a meditation or a ritual, you have to give the phala, the fruits. And I kind of joked with you, I think, last time and said it's like a sales pitch, some encouragement to be engaged in that particular spiritual practice. So that's what is being done here. Having said vacham upasva, meditate on vak, now he's giving some of this phala, the fruits, the benefits that you'll get from this meditation. So he begins, saha yaha vacham brahma iti upaste, one who meditates on speech as being Brahman, deliberately superimposing Brahman on vak, yavad vachaha gatam, as far as speech can reach, tatra, there, asya yatha kamacharaha bhavati, that person's desires will be fulfilled as far as speech can reach. And it's a little intentionally nebulous, isn't it? It's describing the pala in some very loose poetic language, isn't it? Basically, the idea is by meditating on speech as Brahman, wherever vak can reach, you are blessed in that way with whatever vak speech can encompass. Yaha vacham brahma iti upaste. That's the benefit that comes for yaha, one who vacham brahma iti upaste. That benefit comes for one who meditates on Brahman as vak. Then, asti bhagavaha vachaha bhuyaha iti. Asti bhagavaha vachaha bhuyaha iti. Narada asks, just as he did after Nama was taught, now that Vak is taught, he asks exactly the same question. He says, Bhagavaha, O Master, asti, is there vachaha bhuyaha iti? Is there anything beyond Vak? Is there anything better than Vak? To which Sanat Kumara replies, vachaha vava, vachaha bhuyaha asti iti, bhuyaha asti iti. Vava, indeed, vachaha bhuyaha, that which is beyond speech, asti, there is. There is something beyond speech. To which Narada asks, tanme bhagavan bravitu iti, tanme bhagavan bravitu yati, actually tat me, me unto me, Bhagavan, O Master, tat bravi tu, please teach that to me. Whatever is beyond vak, please teach that to me. So that is the second in the list. So the second in the list, the first is nama. Actually, I'm going to ask someone to volunteer and write. We're going to have a list of 15. It actually makes me dizzy to get up and down. Yeah. So someone go and write up here. You're going to write a list of 15 stand-ups. So someone, there we go. So you're going to write number one, nama. Number two, vak. Good. And number two, vak. And while you're there, put up number three, manas. And then you're going to be jumping up and down many more times. Thanks. All right. And this is really a very extensive part of the chapter. And it's also highly repetitive. So I've chosen not to give you the slides because we'll spend probably three or four classes going over this. It's extremely repetitive. So I'm just going to give you a summary. I'll go through the text and just kind of give you the big picture. And I don't think you'll miss anything of importance. And sometimes what I've found in teaching is that sometimes when you remove material, the vision becomes more powerful and clear. It's a general principle. Those of you who have done any editing, you know that's true. Whatever you say, the fewer words you say it in, the more powerful it becomes. So I'll try to what I try to do is very carefully remove portions from what we're studying so that what remains gains in clarity and power. So, with that said, we can proceed. So, let's see here. Yeah, so Narada has just asked, please teach me what is better, what is beyond. Let me get my place here. What vacham upaswa. Yeah, and then finally, Tanme Bhagavan Bravitu, please tell me what is beyond Vak. To which, and you don't have to repeat anymore, I'm just going to, because you don't have it up here. Excuse me. Thank you. Sorry. So Narada has just asked, what is beyond Vak? And to which Narada replies, Sanat Kumara replies, Manaha Vava Vachaha Bhuyaha. He says, Vachaha Bhuyaha, beyond Vak is Manas, mind. Why? Where does Vak come from? So that's kind of the idea. So Vak comes from Manas. And then he a lot of stuff here. Let's see. Vacham cha nama. He says, Vacham cha nama cha Manas anubhavati. That both the prior to nama and Vak come from the mind or follow the mind. So that's my bullseye diagram. So he's saying that the scope of manas includes nama and vak inside of it. So we're getting larger and larger in scope. Each successive one will include all those that came before. And that's what that bullseye diagram explains. So he says,
Manasvava vachaha bhuyaha. Mind is greater than vak. He says, manas hi atma. Mind is atma. Manas hi lokaha. Mind is the worlds. Manas hi brahma. The mind is Brahman. What's going on here? Intentional superimposition. That's right. So this is all for the sake of the meditation, and he concludes by saying, manas upaswa iti. Go ahead and meditate on this manas. Meditate on mind as Brahman. And not surprisingly, what does Narada ask? Exactly the same questions. Asti bhagavaha manasaha bhuyaha iti. Is there anything beyond manas? And of course, what does Sanat Kumara says? There is indeed something beyond manas. And Narada asks again, well, what is that? Please tell me. So what is beyond manas is sankalpaha vava manasaha bhuyan. Now we're in a masculine gender, bhuyan. He says, sankalpa, intention. Sankalpa means intention. Sankalpa is manasaha bhuyan, is beyond manas. So Joanne, now you have to jump up and write number four is sankalpa. So sankalpa is beyond mind. Sankalpa is intent. So mind is like a tool. In order to wield the tool, you need some intention. So sankalpa is the intention behind the mind. So in a sense, it then has a greater scope than the mind. So sankalpa is beyond the mind. And gosh, these commentators just go on and on. And look at this. Nothing much is going on here. Look at this. This is actually the sub-commentary. Shankara is much more terse. He just goes on and on and on and on. I haven't read this. I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm not that interested. So, and finally, Sanat Kumara concludes, saha eshaha sankalpaha, this sankalpa, sankalpam upaswa iti. You should meditate on this sankalpa as being Brahman. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on sankalpa, that power of intention. And that's the Palashruti. And then, so you should go ahead and meditate. Yeah. Sankalpam upaswa. Go ahead and meditate. Deliberately superimpose Brahman on sankalpa. Meditate thus. And what does Narada ask? Anything better than that? And he says, sure. And here we go again. So what is superior, or better, we could be more precise in our language, what is greater in scope than sankalpa? To which Sanat Kumara answers, chittam vava sankalpat bhuyaha. Sankalpat bhuyaha, beyond sankalpa, vaster than sankalpa, is chittam. We just saw manas, so here chittam means buddhi. You have to get used to that. So buddhi is greater in scope than manas. Buddhi is the intellect. Chetayate ata sankalpyate, and the buddhi is that's intentional thinking is born of your buddhi. Many of you have heard me explain manas as non-intentional thinking and buddhi as intentional thinking. So sankalpa here is born of buddhi. Therefore, buddhi has a greater scope than sankalpa, although the word chittam is used here instead of buddhi. And then after he goes on and on for a while, and then he concludes, Chittam Atma. Buddhi is Atma. Chittam Pratishtha. This buddhi is the basis for everything. Again, intentional superimposition. This is for the sake of the meditation. Chittam upasva iti. Go ahead. Deliberately superimpose Brahman on chittam, on buddhi. Perform that meditation, and that meditation will then prepare you. This is all step by step preparation. And what does Narada ask? I don't need to tell you. So what is beyond chittam, and to which Sanat Kumara says, dhyanam vava chittat bhuyaha. Oh, yeah. So five is chitta, and six is dhyana. Good. Two T's and chitta. Got it. All right. Thank you. All right. So dhyanam vava chittat bhuyaha. Dhyanam, meditation. Better to translate it here as contemplation. Because the buddhi needs to be empowered with something to use. It needs knowledge. And that buddhi, that power of intellect, you have to empower that buddhi with some specific knowledge, and that specific knowledge comes through dhyana, here better translated as contemplation. So therefore, contemplation empowers the buddhi or chittam, so then dhyana, contemplation, has a larger scope than dhyanam. So dhyanam is greater in scope than chittam, and dhyanam upasva. You should meditate on dhyanam. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on dhyana for the sake of your meditation. To which Narada asked, is there anything beyond dhyana? And Sanat Kumara says, yes, vijnanam vava. Dhyanat bhuyaha. Dhyanat bhuyaha, beyond dhyana, contemplation, is vijnanam. Vijnanam here. Vijnanam means specific knowledge. You can write number seven, vijnanam. And here, vijnanam, jnanam means knowledge. Vijnanam here is special knowledge, and in context, it means scriptural knowledge. Skip the G and everything, and then AM. Erase the whole, yeah. VIJ. NANAM. Good. Vijnanam. Thank you. So, Vijnanam. Vijnanam here. Me, and this is why we need a commentary, and you can see we would spend a long time going through each of these, so that's why we're doing it in a summary fashion. So vijnanam means scriptural knowledge. In fact, here, the Sanat Kumara himself says, vijnanena vai rigveda vijanati. He says, through vijnana, through scriptural knowledge, you come to understand what the Rigveda teaches. And the Yajurveda and the Samaveda and the Atharvaveda. In fact, remember that long list we had before? it all comes. So that's what we're skipping over. So vijnanam here means scriptural knowledge. Scriptural knowledge is greater in scope than dhyana, contemplation. Contemplation can refer to contemplation on worldly things, but now vijnanam is scriptural knowledge. So scriptural knowledge is talking about fundamental realities, not empirical realities. So therefore, vijnanam, scriptural knowledge, will have a larger scope than dhyana. So scriptural knowledge is dealing with paramarthika satta, absolute reality, as opposed to dhyana, which is dealing with vyavaharika satta, empirical knowledge. So vijnanam is greater in scope than dhyana. Therefore, vijnanam upaswa. You should meditate on vijnanam. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on vijnanam. To which Narada asked, is there anything beyond vijnanam? To which Sanat Kumara says, of course. Balam vava vijnanad bhuyaha. So beyond vijnanam is balam. Balam literally means strength. In this context, it means a kind of shakti, a kind of capacity of your mind, of your intellect, of the capacity to gain this vijnanam. So mental strength, you could take it. So this mental strength is necessary for the sake of vijnana. So therefore, balam is greater. So Joanne can write, number 8 is balam. If I got up and down so many times, I'd be really dizzy. I think Joanne is going to get dizzy just as it is. All right, balam. Yeah, all right. Okay. So balam, strength of the mind, is necessary for scriptural learning. Therefore, balam is greater in scope than balena. What does he say here? I underline this. Why? Balena lokah tishtati, balam upasva. That's why. So he says, balena, by this strength, lokam tishtati, the entire world is supported by some kind of shakti, this balam. So balam upasva iti. You should meditate on balam. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on balam for the sake of your meditation. Excuse me. Of course, now that I asked, is there anything beyond balam? And of course there is. So Sanat Kumara says, yes, annam vava balat bhuyaha. Balat bhuyaha, beyond bala, is annam, food. Now, why is food, anna, beyond bala? If you don't eat food, there's no bala. You can write number 8 is annam. Number 9 is annam. So for this very obvious reason, if you don't eat annam, you don't have balam. So balam vava. Yeah, annam has to annam. All right. Balad bhuyaha. Remember in Sanskrit, a is always right, okay. A, right? Yes. The other one is u.
Right.
Got it. All right. So, finally, annam upaswa. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on annam for your meditation. To which Narada asks one more time, is there anything beyond annam? Of course there is. Apaha vava annat bhuyaha. So annat bhuyaha, beyond anna, is apaha, water. And Joanne is going to write number 10, apaha. It's good to do it in sequence, and you get some exercise while you're at it. Apaha. So you can even put a bar over that. Ah, ah. Get the diacriticals right. Apaha. Apa. Ap, and then drop the at the end. Cause it's a visarga.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So apaha is beyond annam. Why? If you don't have apaha, you don't get annam. If it doesn't rain, the crops don't grow. That's pretty obvious. So therefore, an apaha, water, is greater than, is larger in scope than anam. To which nada end, apaha, upaswa. You should go and meditate on the waters. Interesting word, apaha, is actually a plural in number, and there is no singular. Doesn't exist. So I mean, we can translate it singular, no problem, but it's just a curious word. It only has a plural form. It has no singular form. And the form apaha is actually plural. Okay. So meditate on the waters. To which Narada asks, okay, but is there anything beyond apaha? And of course there is tejaha vava adbhyaha bhuyaha. Adbhyaha bhuyaha, greater than the waters, is tejas, fire. And Joanne will write number 11, tejas. So why is tejas, and now I have to admit, some of the connections are a little bit loose, and you have to kind of stretch things a little bit. The answers are here, but you just have to work on it. So in what sense is tejas, and I'm going to give you two answers. In what sense is tejas beyond or superior to apaha? How about superior to in terms of time? What comes first in terms of seasons? The hot season comes first, followed by the monsoon rain. So that's one answer, and that's actually the answer that Shankaracharya gives, that the hot season, tejas, precedes the rains. But there's another reason lurking here. If you look at numbers 9, 10, and 11, have we seen this before in chapter 6? These were the three elements, right? Annam means prithivi, the element of earth. Apaha, water. And tejas, agni, fire. These were the very words used in chapter 6. These are the three elements. And in the process of creation, which we saw several times, which got, in chapter 6, which got created first? Tejas got created first. Apaha got created after that. And Annam got created after that. So that's also the reason for this particular order. So, tejas upaswa. You should meditate on tejas. As Brahman, you should deliberately superimpose Brahman. Narada, of course, asks, is there anything more expansive? And more expansive, remember, look at that picture. More and more expansive. We're trying to reach out to bhuyaha, to bhuma, that which has no limit. So in the diagram, bhuma is represented by the whiteboard. If the whiteboard had no edge, imagine a whiteboard with no edge. That is bhuma. Everything else is limited in scope, but a whiteboard with no edge would represent bhuma. We're getting there step by step. Here, the next step of being all-pervasive here is akashaha. So Narada asks, what is greater in scope than tejas? The answer is akashaha vava tejasaha bhuyan. Back to masculine gender. Akasha. Akasha. Ah, with the bar over it. Akasha. So akasha vava tejasaha bhuyan. So beyond. One more bar.
This one?
Oh, next one. But she's got the sha right. That's good. And she's got the right one, right? She didn't get the sa or the sha. She's got the sha. See, she's in a Sanskrit class. She's learning all this. She's learning well. All right. Yeah, I just confused myself. All right. So, what is greater in scope than Tejas? Akasha. Akasha is space. Space is boundless. Space is limitless. So, Akasha is more pervasive than Tejas. Therefore, Akasha Upaswa. You should meditate on. What did they say? Yaha Akha. Oh, that's part of that. Does he change the format here? Akasham Brahma Iti Upaste. So. Oh, that's up here. That's why. Yeah. Sorry, looking in the wrong place. Akasham Upaswa. So go ahead and deliberately superimpose Brahman on Akasha for the sake of your meditation. To which Narada asks, is there anything more pervasive than Akasha? Now, that's a pretty strange question. We define Akasha as being all-pervasive, and then Narada asks, what's more pervasive than all-pervasive space? So a strange question gets a strange answer. And it's quite, so admit it, it's a strange question. What is more pervasive than space? And I'm not joking, a strange question gets a really strange answer, because Senat Kumara says, smaraha vava akashat bhuyaha, akashat bhuyaha, greater than Akasha, more pervasive than Akasha, vava indeed, is smaraha, smaranam, memory. Say what? I warned you. Strange question gets a strange answer. So what do you mean? Memory is more pervasive. Actually, memory is greater than Akasha in what sense? And then Senat Kumara doesn't exactly explain. Shankara explains, although you may or may not like his explanation. He says, smartuhu smaranehi sati. Says, when you remember something, for the person who remembers something, akashari sarvam artavat. When you remember something like akasha, etc. In fact, the prior 12, in fact, we could put up number 13. Number 13 is smara. Smara. Smara is number 13, means memory. Smara means smarana is the more common form. So smara, memory. And so Shankara explains that that when you remember anyone from number 1 through number 12, so all of those become meaningful to you only when you can think about them and remember them. That's Shankara's explanation. It is what it is. So this is Upanishad. Upanishad means it's all very poetic and some of it a little obscure. We can handle that. So he says, sarvam artavat. Everything becomes meaningful when you remember it. Smaravattaha bhogyatvat. Because you experience it when you remember it. It's. I suppose I could look at this sub-commentary and see what exactly he means by that. When you remember something, you actually experience it a second time. You experience it the first time now, and then you experience it again when you remember it. So Shankara's making this argument that things become
meaningful and experienced a second time due to memory, smara or smarana. Therefore, smara is greater than akasha. And since smara is greater than akasha, smaram upasva. You should meditate on smara. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on memory for the sake of meditation. Of course, Narada is going to ask again, is there anything beyond smara? To which Sanatkumara replies, asha vava smarat bhuyaha. That's a little obscure. Smarat bhuyaha, beyond smara, beyond, greater than memory, is asha. Now, you can't really translate it as hope. That doesn't work in this context. Has more the sense of icha, desire, would be the right translation here. Don't translate it as hope. Asha means icha, means desire. Number 14, asha, with bars over the az. Asha. So asha, number 14, is great. And translated as good. Perfect. Look at that. She's got the right transliteration. Do you know she could probably manage the Devanagari? Should we ask you to do that? She's learning that. She's learning well. We won't make too. I'm not using Devanagari in this class, so you don't have to either. You're off the hook. But she could do it. All right. All right. So asha here means desire. Icha. In what sense is desire greater than memory? You desire to remember something. Sorry, I can't come up with anything. It's strange, I admit. It's strange. But then what are we talking about? That which is beyond akasha, that which is more pervasive than all pervasive. And first he says smara, memory. Then he says asha, desire. And it's strange. And that's okay. It is what it is. So, therefore, asham, asham, upasva. Therefore, you should meditate on asha. You should deliberately superimpose Brahman on asha. Then we come to number 15, and this is the last in the series, and also things change a little bit here. So, this is the last time Narada asks, is there anything beyond asha, anything greater in scope than asha? To which Sanatkumara replies, pranaha vai ashayaha bhuyan. And just notice he has vai instead of vava. No, and it's kind of, there's a change. This is where the pattern is broken with the 15th of them. You can write number 15 is pranaha, prana. Pra, bar over it, and if you want to be exact, put a dot under the na. Prana. So prana is ashayaha, feminine and gender. Bhuyan is beyond that. And prana here, in fact, we're going to I want to come back to this prana in our next class. So prana, and we'll see this in some detail. I want some time to see something else in Shankara's commentary. Prana is, well, let me just share with you just what's right in front of me here. So why is prana greater, more expansive? He says, yatavai araha nabhau samarpitaha. This is our classic example. Just like spokes of a wheel, ara,
just like spokes of the wheel are connected to the nice word nabhi. It's also called nami, I think is actually the more correct term. Nami, nabhi, the center part of that wheel. So just as spokes are connected to the center part of the wheel, samarpitaha, evam, in the same way, asmin prane, on this prana, sarvam samarpitam, everything is connected, everything depends on prana. Now, prana here is not being used in the limited sense of the life force in your body, but in a parallel way. So he says, sarvam samarpitam, everything is connected to this prana. Which means we're not talking about just your prana, we're talking about everyone's prana. Prana is part of the sukshma sharira. There is a vyashti sukshma sharira, an individual subtle body within the person sitting in your chair. That is the vyashti sukshma sharira, which includes your individual prana. But here we're talking about not the individual prana, but sarvam samarpitam. Everything depends on this samashti prana. Samashti prana belongs to, samashti means total, collective. Vyashti, individual, samashti, collective. So the samashti prana, the collective prana, belongs to this samashti sukshma sharira, the collective sukshma sharira. Some of you know that samashti sukshma sharira, we have a fancy word to refer to Ishvara who possesses that samashti sukshma sharira. We call him Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha. And this is where our sequence of meditations concludes, with meditation on Hiranyagarbha. And Hiranyagarbha is Ishvara, an aspect of Ishvara. Which means you don't have to superimpose because it's already Ishvara. So superimposition is not necessary. And for that reason, he doesn't say pranaha pranam upasva. He doesn't say. Because you don't have to superimpose Brahman on Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha is Brahman. It is the whole. And we'll come back to that in our next class because it'll make the connection to what comes next after these 15 meditations. Now I want to back up and show you something about this sequence of the 15 meditations. And Shankaracharya, in his introduction to the chapter, explains this very nicely. He says, Tani namadini pranantani. Tani, all of these. What are these? Nama adi, that which has nama as the first one, and prana antani, prana as the last one. Some of you will recognize these bahuvrihi compounds. Good. So, all of these, starting with nama and ending with prana, kramena nirdishya, having explained them. So, Sanat Kumara, having explained these one by one to Narada, and making him meditate on them in sequence. You're supposed to, 15 different kinds of meditation are to be practiced here. So kramena nirdishya, having shown all this to Narada, tadvarena api, by means of these 15 meditations, bhumakhyam nirtishayam tat, Nirdekshyami. So he's putting, Shankaracharya is putting words in Sanat Kumara's mouth. Sanat Kumara says, Nirdekshyami, I will teach. I will teach, Narada, I will teach you. I will teach you what? Niratishayam tattvam. Tattvam, reality. Not the two words, tattvam asi, but as one word, tattva, and then tattvam. So tattvam means reality. Niratishayam tattvam, unqualified reality. A reality with no boundary, a reality with no limits. I will teach you that tattvam, that reality, which has no boundaries, no limits, it's niratishayam, that reality which is bhuma akhyam, that reality which is called bhuma, the title of our chapter. I will teach you, so Shankara puts these words in Sanat Kumara's mouth. Sanat Kumara then says, Narada, through this sequence of 15 meditations, I will teach you bhuma. I will teach you that which is limitless. If that's so, why isn't bhuma in our list? He said, I will teach you bhuma through this sequence of 15 meditations. Then you'd think that bhuma should be part of the list. Well, Shankara says there's a special way that the teaching is being done here. And this is just one of the very wonderful teaching methodologies used in Vedanta. Shankara calls it Shaka Chandra Darshanavat. He says it is done through Shaka Darshana. Shaka, what did I just say? Shaka Chandra Darshana. You may know it as Arundhati Darshana. They mean exactly the same thing. You might be familiar with this. It's called Arundhati Darshana Nyaya. It's based on this part of the marriage ritual where you're supposed to go outside and look at this particular star called Arundhati. And the priest leads you to see that star. And the priest leads you to see that particular star by starting with a tree over on the side. He points to a branch in the tree. Do you see that branch? Yes. Do you see the fork in the branch? Yes. Do you see the star? Yeah. And then after, yes, I see that star. And then he says, yeah, that's not Arundhati. But he says, you go look a little bit further to the left and a little bit higher. Do you see that really bright star? Yes. That's not Arundhati. Then he says, but look a little above it. You see the star that's a little dimmer? Yes, that's not Arundhati. And he goes through this a number of times, leading you step by step, we could say through 15 steps, just to make a connection here, until finally you see Arundhati. Here, this is called Arundhati Darshana Nyaya. Here, Shankara calls it by a different name. It's exactly the same principle, Shaka Chandra Darshana Nyaya. So Shaka branch, Chandra, the moon. So suppose there's a little crescent moon, brand new moon. You can barely see it. And somebody says, look at the moon. I don't see the moon. And he says, oh, look over there. I still don't see the moon. Look at the tree. The tree is not the moon. Look at this. Look at the tree. You want to see the moon? Look at the tree. You want bhuma. Meditate on nama. Nama is not bhuya. Bhuma. Meditate on vak. Vak is not bhuma. Step by step by step. But that's how this nyaya works. Nyaya means, in this context, a teaching methodology. So
tree is not the moon. The branch is not the moon. Then he says, look at the fork in the branch. That's not the moon. But if you look in the middle of the branch, that's where you see the moon. So you see, this is a methodology of leading you step by step by step. And what significance, a step by step thing is normal. I mean, so we learn so many things by stepwise. What's significant about this is the negation of each prior step. So we meditate on Nama as Brahman, but then Nama is Nama, it's not Brahman. So we use it at first for the sake of meditation, then we negate it, neti, neti. Then we superimpose Brahman on Vak for the sake of meditation. Then we negate Vak, neti, neti. Then we superimpose Brahman on Manas. Then we negate Manas, and so forth through all of these steps until the 15th step, which we'll see again in the next class. It's this process of negation, neti, neti, that makes the step. As I said, there are many, in learning many things, we go through a sequence of steps. What's unique here is that every step gets negated. You leave it behind. And this is also, there's another nyaya, this sopana nyaya, a ladder. Sopana means ladder. There are steps, or any kind of staircase, steps. And the metaphor of the ladder is not as obvious, but it kind of has the same, leads you to the same thing. If you're standing on one step, you want to get to the next step, but you can't get to the next step until you stop standing on the prior step. So you have to cease standing on the prior step for the sake of moving on to the next step. Or an easier way of seeing it is suppose you're crossing a stream on some stepping stones. In order to move to the next stone, you have to get off of the one you're currently on. You have to abandon your current perspective to go forth into a new perspective. This is so Vedantic. This whole, and this is the neti neti, na iti, na iti. This is all the negation. We negate our perspectives, but in a very methodical way. Notice it has to be methodical. If you want to point out a star, you can't just say, you know, look over there. Now look over there. Now look over there. That doesn't work. So there has to be a methodology. If you're using this Arundhati or the Shaka Chandra Nyaya, there has to be a plan. There has to be a direction. In the latter, it's very obvious. I mean, the steps are sequential. There's a plan. There's a sequence. The point I'm making, it's not random negation. It's a very precise, methodical process of superimposition followed by negation. This, many Vedantic scholars say all of Vedanta is nothing but superimposition and negation. Intentional superimposition followed by negation. Adhyaropa pavarabhyam nishprapancham prapanchyate. This is a famous quote. Nishprapancham, that which is beyond the world, prapanchyate, is discovered, is revealed, how? Adhyaropa apavarabhyam. Through adhyaropa, intentional superimposition, and apavada, negation. Famous quote. Adhyaropa apavarabhyam nishprapancham prapanchyate. Because how can you indicate that which has no qualities. Right? Generally, when we want to indicate something, if there are a bunch of apples, you say, give me the green one. So you distinguish the apple by its quality. Suppose apples have no qualities whatsoever. It doesn't make any sense, I know. Nirguna apples. How can you tell one nirguna apple from another nirguna apple? It doesn't make any sense. So how can you indicate something which is without qualities? It requires a special technique. That special technique is what Shankara calls Shaka Chandra Nyaya. It's this process of deliberate superimposition and negation. This is absolutely central to the teachings of Vedanta. And that's what this whole series of meditations is about. Superimpose Brahman on Nama, negate. Superimpose Brahma on Vak, negate. Adhyaropa, apavada abhyam. Adhyaropa, superimposition. Apavada, negation. But in a very deliberate, methodical way, leading us to this absolute, leading us, and just a final comment here. Another scriptural passage you've all heard many times, yato vacho nivartante. So what we're seeking is beyond words. But what are we using? Words. And we have no choice. We're using words to reach that which is beyond words. On the surface, that may sound illogical. But with reference to what we've just discussed, it makes perfect sense. We use words to deliberately superimpose something. Then we use those same words to negate it. Using words, we go through this cycle, the sequence of deliberate superimposition and negation. We do that again and again and again until finally everything is negated. When everything is negated, everything means everything. Everything in the universe is negated. Finally, when you do enough cycles of this adhyaropa pavada, this superimposition and negation, you keep doing it until every last thing in the universe has been negated. When every last thing in the universe has been negated, what's left? Got it. The negator. You, that consciousness behind this whole process of negation. And that consciousness happens to be Brahman. Prajnanam Brahma, the Upanishad says. Okay, what a good place to conclude our class. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya, Om Shanti 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 Om. That's it. Very good. You're welcome. See you next time.